This is the Parenting for Faith podcast from BRF Ministries. Parenting for Faith exists to help you help the children and teens in your life to meet and to know God. We do this through online events, courses, and resources, and you can find out more at parentingforfaith.org.
Hello, how are you guys doing? Welcome to the Parenting for Faith podcast. Hope this finds you well. I'm very sad to say that this is our final episode for season 8. What a great season it's been. We've been looking at connecting with God through all sorts of different things like science and music and art and drama and writing and big questions. And today, for our finale, we are welcoming none other than Rachel Turner, the founder and pioneer of Parenting for Faith, to help us think through how we connect with God and how we can help our kids connect with God through the big festivals and holidays and seasons in the year. We're thinking about that particularly because this week is Holy Week and lots of us will be gearing up towards Easter. So I think you're going to really enjoy our chat, which we'll go to in a minute. But just to say, although this is the finale of season 8, don't fear, we are not stopping the podcast. We will be back after Easter with season 9. So get April the 23rd in your diary. That is when season 9 will drop. Episode 1 will drop on the 23rd. And it will be another full season of super guests, just like you're used to. Next time, we're going to be looking at the theme of curveballs. So what are those things we never, ever expected before we became parents that have become our reality? So we're going to be looking at some big issues, some everyday issues, and most importantly, how can we be equipped as Christian parents to disciple our children through these unexpected seasons of life. So it's going to be a great season. Don't miss it. Make sure you're following us on social media as well. We're Parenting for Faith BRF on Facebook and Instagram. We're God Connected on X. We're even on Threads. We don't really do very much on Threads, but if Threads is your thing, then do follow us on there. And then you'll stay updated with everything that's going on with the podcast and all our other resources. If social media is not your thing, make sure you're signed up to our emails and you can sign up on parentingforfaith.org. Now, as we draw this season to a close, I just want to remind everyone listening that we want this podcast and the wisdom that our guests offer to go as far as it possibly can. So to that end, would you take a moment to review or rate our podcast on your app? Every app does it slightly differently, but hopefully it'll be quite obvious how you can say nice things about this app. If you've really enjoyed it, please would you rate it or review it in your app because that will help it become more visible to more people. We'd be so grateful. The other thing you can do is tell your friends about it. You know, if you've got some friends from church or you've got a toddler group or a, I don't know, youth group parents, WhatsApp or whatever it is, think who in your life might really love to know about the Parenting for Faith podcast, because word of mouth is always the best recommendation. So we would just love it if this wisdom that our guests offer each week without fail could get out there to as many people who would find it helpful as possible. That would be just amazing. And the final thing I wanted to say is that this podcast, as with most of our resources here at Parenting for Faith, is offered entirely free of charge. We want to keep as many of our resources free at the point of access as we possibly can. But that doesn't mean they are free to produce. They cost money. They cost money in staff hours and in technology and in the platforms we have to pay for in order to offer them. And the amazing thing is you can partner with Parenting for Faith in the work that we're doing to stop the hemorrhage of children and teens leaving the church in their droves from only £2 a month. Now, think about that for a minute. £2 a month. That's not even a coffee in a coffee shop. It used to be. We used to say it's the cost of a coffee a month. It's not even a coffee, right? You can't get a coffee anywhere in the country. Well, someone will now write into me and tell me that their local cafe does a coffee for less than £2. But mostly, most of us cannot get a coffee for under £2. I probably spend that much and more every week on chocolate. But that is doing nothing to stop the hemorrhaging of children from our church. But we are really, really passionate here at Parenting for Faith at seeing our children grow and mature into their faith, and a faith that lasts their whole lives, not just until they're 18, not just until they're 14 and they can stay at home rather than come to church. We want to see children discipled and growing in their faith with Jesus, and that would be a lifelong journey for them that starts in the home, starts with their parents and their carers and the leaders that wrap around them. So if you share our vision, if you would just love to see a culture change in the children and young people that we are bringing up today, if you'd love to see them come into a real living, exciting, spirit-filled relationship with Jesus, and you love what we're doing here because that's what we're all about, then would you consider becoming a friend of Parenting for Faith? As I say, it can cost as little as £2 a month. You can give more if you want, £5, £10, £15, £20 a month. It's totally up to you. But £2 a month, we are looking to widen our support base in people who are standing with us to say, yes, we want to see this happen in our generation. So I'll put the link in the bio. It's brf.org.uk/donate, but I'll put that in the show notes today so that you can go there and have a look at how easy it is to partner with Parenting for Faith. And we would be so grateful, so excited really to do this work with you. So thank you in advance.
Our guest today is none other than Rachel Turner, the founder of Parenting for Faith. Rachel probably needs no introduction to any of you, but in case she does, she's the author of 10 books for families, parents and church leaders, including Parenting as a Church Leader, Comfort in Uncertain Times, It Takes a Church to Raise a Parent, and her most recent release, Parenting Teens for a Life of Faith. Rachel writes, travels, she works for her church in leadership, she speaks internationally, there's not much she doesn't do, and she is a huge Star Trek fan. Rachel, tell me why I should watch Star Trek. I'm not a sci-fi fan, so why?
Oh my goodness. Well, that's a whole other podcast. I have no idea why you should watch Star Trek. I love the beauty of humanity and the imagination that it brings, and a hope for the future of just like, oh wow, wouldn't it be amazing if money wasn't a thing anymore and everyone had health care and could afford food? What could we possibly do? It's just like this little happy place of mine. It might not be for everybody, but it definitely is for me.
You've actually sold it to me in that. I think I need to try and branch out. Rachel, we're talking today about seasons and festivals. It's Holy Week this week, so we've really got Easter on the mind, but we're going to be broadening out that conversation a little to look at how we connect with God, how we help our children connect with God through festivals all the way through the year. I don't think I've ever met a child who doesn't love Christmas and Easter because of the presents and the chocolate and the general kind of excitement. But how can we as parents help our kids to grasp the sort of core of what we're celebrating, the amazingness of what we're celebrating during these festivals, do you think?
I think for me, in some ways, I think it's about lowering expectations, because for us we go like, oh, it's the amazingness of Christmas, the amazingness of Easter, and we have these huge theological like topics that we want to try to communicate to our kids in these things, and it can be very stressful because we're like, how could I communicate the entirety of the salvation message in one moment over a weekend where one of my kids is sick? And so we try to shove everything into this thing, and it can be stressful. And so I would tend to say we get to do these festivals every year. And so it doesn't have to be about every year trying to embrace the fullness of the theological understanding of this season, but it's a yearly opportunity to delve into this big topic and pick maybe one thing that your kid is curious about, one thing that happens to be just resonating with your family in this season, one truth that you think actually has been really powerful to you and you want to help your kids grasp. And so lower your expectations of trying to do it all and just say, this season with this Easter, what is something I really want to help my kids delve into in this moment? And so it could be just exposing them to the sunrise service and talking about the new life. It could be a tradition you've always done. It could just be telling your stories around a table, but just pick one thing rather than try to do it all.
That's so helpful and so reassuring. So we don't have to do it all, right? We don't have to do all the things. Just one thing is good. That kind of leads into what's going to ask next, which is that, you know, a lot of us Christian parents, we see the world making these festivals into something very secular. Well, not even making them into something secular. They are just very, very separate festivals, how the world celebrates Easter, Christmas, how we celebrate it. So we kind of become more concerned to make our own families' celebrations of those festivals about Jesus. But inevitably, these are busy times of the year, right? Like in terms of the secular world, schools going crazy, churches going crazy. These are busy times of the year. So what advice do you have for us parents? You said, you know, you don't have to do all the things. That's super helpful. Can you say a little bit more about kind of how as parents we can help focus our families on Jesus when we are exhausted, when the thoughts adding something else to this busy schedule just kind of breaks us out in hives?
I think for us, sometimes what happens is we prioritize activities over traditions. And I think traditions are really good because it takes the thinking out of it. And so if you do something every year, your brain isn't thinking, oh, what new interesting Easter activity can I add? You're just thinking, oh, every Easter we do this. And so I would suggest that we as parents can create simple traditions that anchor us in what we want, but it will be different for every family because what tradition do you value at this time of year? I know some parents who go huge and I know some people who go tiny, but for me, what is the heartbeat of this festival, this Easter, this Christmas? What is the heartbeat of it for you? And so I know one family who their tradition, regardless of whatever activity they feel that they have the emotional and physical energy for, where they want to be like, oh, let's go on an Easter trail or, you know, like all the fun extra stuff. But the one thing that is non-negotiable that they do every Easter is they have a special breakfast where they like everyone makes one thing. So like one person makes cinnamon rolls and one person makes eggs and they make breakfast and they sit around and everybody tells their faith story. And that's it. It's what has God done for me? And for some people, they just tell, for, you know, the dad likes telling his story of like how he came to faith. And the 6-year-old was telling me she's just going to tell one story of one thing God did for her this year. But they think about it and they plan it and they're like, how are they going to tell their story of life with God? Because that's what Jesus came to give us, is life with God. And that's their tradition. It's a tiny tradition. It's something that you can plan or not plan. Once they said one year they were too tired, so they just got McDonald's breakfast. It doesn't really matter about the food, but it was this one moment where they come together and do one thing. And so it's a small one. I know another family, I mean, this is not my family, but they were like, we do the sunrise service. We go out and for a while they like, we didn't go to a church that had a sunrise service. So we just, as a family, went out. It's the one time a year we all see sunrise together. Mm-hmm. And it's really exciting for the kids. And we go out at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning and everyone's exhausted. And we do this. And it's a little family tradition that every year the kids look forward to. And we just go and we say, wow, isn't a new day beautiful? That's what, can you imagine what it felt like on that morning? And we talk about that. What are the small do-it-yourself tradition? I know another family who just reads with the sequence of the crucifixion and the resurrection a little bit every night, and they ask questions and they talk about it. What is a internal tradition that you can totally control that is authentic to your family, that fits with your kids, so that it's something that is just a little anchor point? So often we focus on the external traditions. How do we participate in Good Friday service or doing all these external things? But it's got to be about what you value for Easter and what works for your family. I have never, ever done Lent with my family because that just doesn't work for my family. And that's okay. That's not because it's a not valuable tradition. It just isn't the anchor point for our family's Easter tradition.
Yeah, that's helpful. And traditions change over time as well, right? Like what works for your family when they're younger doesn't work so well maybe when they're a bit older. And you can treat these things kind of lightly, can't you? We are not a sunrise family either. I could not see that working. And neither are we a lovely Sunday morning breakfast family because my husband's a church leader. He's gone by the time everyone's up and wanting to eat. I know some families who do a Passover. That's their tradition. Yeah. Every Maundy Thursday, they'll do a Passover meal. And there's so many different ways of getting that depth and making things so special. That's really helpful. Thank you. And then sort of focusing on, we're looking at all festivals really, but obviously this week we're thinking very much about gearing up to celebrate Easter, but Easter itself is so wonderful. And yet the story leading up is complicated and messy and gory in places and not massively child friendly. How would you advise parents this week, particularly maybe with younger kids or kids who are more sensitive to this kind of material, how would you advise them to navigate this tricky but wonderful story at Easter?
Well, I think it's very I saw a spider. Sorry. It scared me. I always, you know, it's this time of year where there's spiders on the ceiling. Sorry. I'm not afraid of spiders. I just to notice where their bodies are and keep an eye on them.
I agree.
I grew up in California, so spiders were poisonous there. Not so much in Britain, but, you know, in my head, it still is.
You never know.
No, you never know. So how do we help our kids navigate what can potentially be a gory and very emotional story, particularly for some of our kids who are very sensitive? So kids will handle the story fine. And you'll notice some kids get quite emotional about the story or are quite sensitive to things like that. And that's okay. You know your kids. You're the expert in your kids. So you'll know sort of how to navigate that. One thing I guess I would say is that it's okay for your kids to be emotionally impacted by the story. Sometimes we don't want our kids to feel the impact of it or to be worried or sad for Jesus or have that sort of weight on them. And I would suggest that sometimes letting them experience the impact of the story is part of the journey of Easter, that this Jesus that they love and know and delight in did go through this. And that's something that is important for them to feel, and that's okay. But as parents, our job is to help them navigate that. And so by telling the story, to say, does that make you sad? That makes me sad too. And when I feel sad about this, I love singing this song. Or when I feel sad about this, I just think, I am so grateful, Jesus. And it makes me just want to love him even more. And so helping them see what you do with those emotions is actually a really powerful part of the Easter journey for them to be able to learn how you deal with the concept of feeling shame because Jesus did that because I sinned. And I've seen some kids get in a little shame spiral. And so we think, we shouldn't put that pressure on them that, you know, Jesus died for our sin because they'll feel bad. But what we get to teach them is Jesus didn't die on the cross and raise again so that we could continually say bad us, but he died on the cross so that we could be free from that shame. And this is what we do when we feel these things. And so actually it's a really great discipleship journey to help them through that. So that would be my first suggestion. The second suggestion I would say is you don't need to focus so much on the physicality of it. There will be kids who are absolutely fascinated with the physicality of the process of dying on the cross. So often you turn out that those kids are the medical kids that like you end up turning into doctors and things, and that's okay. Follow their curiosity. That's all right. But to me, if you focus on the fruit of the story of Easter, then the anchor points can go deep or not deep. So for instance, like my five anchor points, we talk about telling the whole story in Parenting for Faith. So it's the same story, but it goes deeper. And so the anchor points can be Jesus came to, you know, help us be freed from sin, and he had a choice and he chose to say yes to this week. So this isn't something that Jesus that happened to Jesus without his choices. He chose to do this for us. And so that sometimes I've seen kids who get afraid of it because they're like, this horrible thing happened to Jesus and he had no control. And the fact that Jesus actually chose this was his choice that he chose. He was arrested and put on trial because people were lying about him and they were trying to trick him and they disliked him so much. They were trying to do that. And that is something that happens. Some people lie about us nowadays, and Jesus knows exactly how that feels. And he chose to let that happen. He chose to not argue. He chose to allow himself to be misunderstood. Then people got scared and left him. Some people stood by him, and that was quite a lonely time for Jesus. But Jesus still was loving and kind. He still said yes to this process. He endured all of that and even loneliness, and he kept doing that. And then he died on the cross, and he took all of our sin on us, and then he came back to life 3 days later, which was amazing. And that broke the sin, and the veil in the temple was torn, which means that all of us get to be with God in every day of our lives. And it was amazing. And that's what this week is about, that I get to talk to God in the shower today because what Jesus did a long time ago for us. And that is amazing. And I'm so grateful. And so the story doesn't have to be, and then he was beaten, and then his back was torn with 9 cattails, and then he was spat on. It doesn't have to be the individual horror for the young ones and for the ones who are sensitive, we can give them the anchor points. And then as they get older and as they cope with more and more, we can then supplement those bits of the story. You know, we can tell them more about what the arrest and trial looked like. We can tell them more about what that loneliness and the isolation and the forgiving them because they didn't know what they did. We can go deeper into that story, but the story will stay the same rather than the story being constantly revealing new horrors every year. It's the same story, just going deeper.
And is there a place for books and resources as we seek to kind of deepen those anchors that you're talking about?
Yes, there are lots of books and anchors out there. I want to say I'm trying to see my bookshelf. The Garden, the Cross, and the...
The Garden, the Curtain, and the Cross.
That one.
Yes.
That one's
yes,
a good one. But also, I just want to say that you don't need a resource to tell the gospel story.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us as parents feel really tied to resources. But actually, you telling the story the way you know the story, and you telling the story the way you know your kid might need to tell the story, can actually be more powerful and as significant as really well-written stories. Jesus Storybook Bible is another one that does a really good job of that too. And so there are lots of resources that you can use, but also you are a resource, and just being able to tell your kid the gospel quickly can also be a really helpful tool to have.
That's so good. Thank you. Rachel, do secular traditions that we might have around these times of year have any place within Christian festivals, or do we just need to throw them out, like Easter eggs, Santa, whatever? What's the deal with those?
My line is, you're the parent, you decide.
I'm not
convinced that there's a right answer, because for some of those traditions, they're just part of our family traditions that have gone back a really, really, really long time. So in my family, we dye Easter eggs with absolutely no meaning whatsoever besides what a unique and weird craft that they really enjoy doing every year. Easter eggs in our tradition is like little eggs, and then you just dunk them and dye, and they make them pretty and sparkly. And we're like, wow. We did that. I mean, it has no meaning besides what we do every year. And that's okay. If that's something that you want to do and participate in, feel absolutely free. For me, it's more about the framing that goes around it. And so often we place the emphasis on what the tradition is rather than how we explain it and why we talk about what we're doing. So if you're someone who does Santa, or if you're somebody who, you know, wants to do hiding Easter eggs around the house because it's a fun activity, feel free. But it's also helpful to say, this has nothing to do with the Jesus story. It's just something fun that people like doing around this year. We like doing something fun around this year. So when you frame it, that's what's helpful, because kids make weird connections. And that's when it begins to be questioning for us, is if we don't explain why we do this and how it ties in or does not tie in to the Christian story, when we tie those things in, it makes sense for kids. But if we just leave them to make their own connections, that's when we have these great conversations in children's ministry about I've had one kid describe to me about how Jesus was miraculous and he laid eggs, and that's why we celebrate and we do Easter eggs at Easter, because Jesus was God and he laid eggs. And I'm looking at this kid like, really? And the kid's like, yeah, totally convinced. And I thought, a parent just hadn't made those connections. Totally fine. Jesus did not lay eggs. It's just something fun that we do around Easter.
It makes Jesus sound like something in the Wonka factory, doesn't it?
Yes.
Laying chocolate eggs. That sounds wonderful.
Yes,
I'm sure Jesus could provide chocolate eggs out of nowhere. Maybe that will be a feature of heaven.
Exactly. I know. And I know some people explain it like eggs symbolize new life. And I'm like, that's great, except we hard boil them and eat them in my family. So I don't know if that explanation works for you, but you explain it to your kids. So I don't think there's a right and wrong about what activities we should do. I think we as parents get to frame for our kids how it happens and why it happens and what we choose to do. And that's where the power comes.
It's really helpful to hear you say that, because I think my sort of angle on this would always be in my family, oh, I've got to kind of somehow link the secular traditions that we're doing. Like, we always do an egg hunt, you know, we always do stockings at Christmas. There are various things we do that don't really have anything to do with Jesus, but I would always try and kind of link them in somehow. So it's actually really refreshing to hear you say, if it's got nothing to do with Jesus, just say that, it's fine. That it's not like everything we do at these seasons has to be gospel focused. So that's a helpful thought. Thank you. And then kind of what I'm hearing you say is really that we're kind of breaking down barriers in a sense between what is secular and what is sacred, because everything we do with our children is part of their ongoing faith journey. So sort of putting that question around the other way, are there ways that we can redeem secular festivals through the year and make them opportunities to connect with God? So I'm thinking about things that don't have their roots in the liturgical year. So I don't know, birthdays or Father's Day or Grandparents' Day, whatever you might celebrate in your family through the year. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are absolutely, if you have the mental, emotional capacity to do so. But sometimes when we look at it all and we think, oh gosh, every year on their birthday, we want to do this. And every year on their baptism day, we want to do this. You can create a rod for your own back of traditions to maintain. So for me, yes, there are loads of opportunities out there to create milestone markers that can be incredibly significant for your kids. I know some people who on the sort of baptism day regularly ask people of different ages in that kid's life to write an encouragement letter to this child. So this child has a little box of, you know, all these every yearly encouragement letters of how these people have seen them grow in God over the years. That's wonderful. If you can organize all of that and that's important to you, then feel free. But I don't think it's necessary. I think it's a unique reflection of your family. So for instance, in our family, we do Rosh Hashanah, which is the sort of the Jewish New Year. But we've created our own sort of tradition around it because there's this moment of a new year and of marking every year as different and significant that we really value and love. And so in our family, we've created this tradition that is every year we get together with friends and we pray for one significant person and we buy them a gift of what we're praying for them in this coming year. And we talk about what God did in the last year. And for us, it's just this wonderful little marker moment that I don't think is mandated by anything that we have to do, but we really wanted to do it because we thought it was significant in our family. And so, yeah, if you want to do those milestones, absolutely feel free, but do it out of a family desire to say, this is significant to us and this is what we want for our kids, not because you feel like you have to do it because it's what a good Christian parent would do. That is the way of craziness and feeling like you're constantly failing. But sit down as a family and say, what do we think is really important to mark every year? What opportunities do we have to say, this is our one year that we're going to invite people over or people that we don't know about faith? And, you know, decide what you as a family are passionate about and establish a tradition around that.
Mm. That's so wise. Thank you. And again, very, very reassuring, I think, to those of us who just feel rushed off our feet by normal life, let alone extra festivities. And just finally, Rachel, I just want to ask you, there are so many other festivals that we mark through the year. We've been kind of focusing a little bit on Christmas and Easter, but, you know, we have Valentine's to whatever extent we do that in our families, Mother's and Father's Day, Harvest Festival, Halloween, birthdays. There's so many kind of different things going on. World Book Day, you know, or International Women's Day, or, you know, things that are becoming kind of more of a thing in our culture. What role do these celebrations have in our faith journeys? Is there a way that they can be used as milestones, or would your response be the same? Well, you know, pick them up if they're helpful and don't stress if they're not. What would you say?
I think sometimes it's about the difference between traditions and fun things to do. So I know some people go, this is the tradition, we're going to do it every year. Like, this is an anchor point for our family. And then other things are like, hey, we've never done Valentine's Day. You want to do a fun Valentine's Day night? And they do. And so they become these fun, additional, occasional celebrations that can be really fun. You know, Harvest Festival can be something that you think, oh, you know, once every couple of years, let's go to, you know, a maze and do something, or let's celebrate the harvest in our lives because we've had a really tough year. And actually this year, I think what we really could use is a moment where we go camping for a night and we say, this is God, what you have done for us this year. And everybody brings something and we talk about what God has done in our year, like the harvest of our lives. And I think those yearly opportunities that come up, if we say, I don't feel like the need that we have to do them every time, but there are these great reminders when Valentine's Day comes up and you want to talk about some Valentine and sacrifice and martyrdom, or you may want to talk about just love and valuing people in your life to do those occasional ones and without the need for saying we've done it once and now we have to do it forever. And it can add a real delight to your year to say this, you know, let's do something for Father's Day this year rather than just do something small. Let's go big and family camping trip, or to say, you know, we normally, you know, just do a birthday at home, but we want to do a whole week of birthdays, you know, whatever you want. Feel free to add it to the flavor of your family without it becoming the anchor of your family would be what I would encourage you to do, because every season is different. You may be going through a really tough grief season where you've lost grandma and grandpa this year and you're like just sad. And so maybe this year, you know, doing All Hallows Eve is a really good place. You know, go find a place where there's a church that does, you know, give a moment for grieving families and go to that service and say it's okay to be sad. And that's an important place to go for that. I know there's a great, what we do at our church, a service every year for lost babies and for families who've suffered a miscarriage or a stillbirth, to just go as a family and say, we're not sure we want to go every year, but this year we want to do this. Mm. And that is significant. So feel free to do what your family needs at the time, to grab onto God and to give your kids a way to say, sometimes when we feel these things, these traditions can help us. And you add that to their equipping bag that they have for their lives.
Mm. Yeah, that's helpful. I remember reading once that in the Jewish tradition, there is a sort of caveat for those who are grieving that for 12 months after the bereavement, they are excused from dancing at festivities and celebrations. The Jews are obviously very big on celebrations and festivals. So it's really interesting that the expectation is still that you would be there and that you would go, but you're allowed to not be joyful or exuberant in the same way. And that's because, as you've just said, they're good for us. They're good reminders. And of course, in the Jewish tradition, these festivals that were initially, I guess, set up by God and Moses were set up as reminders so that there would be constant reminders to God's people of his faithfulness to them in the desert. And and when we withdraw from all of that, we miss out on God's faithfulness to us, which we need more than ever, I guess, in rough times. So that, yeah, that's really, that's a helpful thought. Thank you so much. Rachel, I'm going to obviously pop links to your books and everything in the show notes. I don't think we need to ask you if there's anything particularly you want to promote, but is there anything you got speaking things coming up, or anything you kind of want to share about what you're up to or writing, or is it all very hush-hush at the moment?
Well, currently I'm writing a book called The Ministry of Ordinary Walks, which is really for all of us adults, whether you have kids or not have kids, sort of taking the tools of how do you walk alongside other people's life faith journeys and how you do that well and authentically. So whether it's with people you work with, whether it's family members who don't yet know Jesus, how do you just be an ordinary you and yet have an impactful spiritual impact on the people around you? So that's what I'm working on now. But everything else is in Parenting for Faith. So dig into that.
We're so excited for that book. It just sounds amazing. I think it's going to be such a good resource. And I'm going to spring this on you because it's the last episode of our season. Would you just pray for our listeners briefly?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'd love that. Oh, God, I thank you so much that you are the God who wants a relationship with children and young people. I thank you that you want to connect with them more than even we as parents and grandparents and carers and children's leaders and youth leaders want you to. You have such a heart for them, and you are pursuing them and talking to them and guiding them, and you have wonderful adventures to go on with them. And so I just bless you and thank you for your heart for our kids. And I pray, Lord, right now that you would fill every adult who is listening to this with the peace that passes all understanding. I thank you that we don't have to be perfect because you are. I thank you that our ordinary lives can be such a gift to our kids. And so I pray that you would increase our influence with our children, that you would connect our hearts together with them, that we may walk alongside them well, that we may encourage them deeply, and that we may just see them flourish in a journey and life with you as we try to walk alongside of them. I pray that you would bless them and bless us now as a family. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
That's a wrap for season 8. And if you're thinking, oh my goodness, I'm already getting Parenting for Faith podcast withdrawal symptoms, don't worry, because we have over 200 archive episodes in our back catalogue. So you can spend the next few weeks flicking through those, picking the ones that are relevant for your season or the ones that look interesting to you. And yeah, knock yourself out, have fun with it. We've got so much good stuff already in our back catalogue, but that doesn't mean we're not going to come back for a fabulous season 9. So we look forward to seeing you on April the 23rd. One last thing, we always end every episode with a question that you can ask your kids, your teens, your adult children even, to spark a conversation around the dinner table. Or they might not even be your children, they might just be people you're having dinner with. But here's a question you can ask the people you are in community with this week, and it is this. What is your favourite festival of the year and why? What is your favourite festival of the year and why? God bless, take care, and we'll see you on the 23rd.